and welcome to another episode of Such Stuff, the podcast from Shakespeare's Globe. With the onset of the wind and the rain and those dark, cold evenings, there's one thing we can look forward to and revel in. It is, of course, the spooky month. And this year we'll be bringing you a new digital festival on Shakespeare and fear. Whilst we'll be relishing all things horror and the suspense and fright of ghost stories old and new, we'll also be taking a deeper look at what it means to be fearful. Now, more than ever, we're surrounded by fear. Why then do we still need ghost stories? What catharsis do they offer? What parts of us do they tap into? And how do ghost stories help us to cope with an increasingly fearful world? Joining us are a couple of familiar voices. A little-known fact about artistic director Michelle Terry and actor Paul Reddy is that they relish a spooky story almost as much as a Shakespearean one. As self-confessed horror fans, I sent a selection of questions over to Michelle and Paul about all things Shakespeare and fear. Here they delve into what makes a ghost story scary, why we continue to tell them, and what is unique about the ghosts in Shakespeare's play. Here's Michelle and Paul.
My name is Michelle Terry.
My name is Paul Reddy.
And this episode of Such Stuff, we are talking about ghost stories, but particularly through the prism of fear, which is a subject that we've decided to focus on for this particular moment in time, for this particular festival. And it just felt like, I suppose partly for me, I was kind of interested in the plays that we know Shakespeare wrote during the plague. Yeah, I find it fascinating that he chose to write Macbeth, he chose to write King Lear. So the natural assumption would be that everybody wants comedy and escapism. I haven't checked the latest Netflix figures or the latest Amazon Prime figures. It would be interesting to know the kind of films that people are, or stories that people are being drawn to at the moment. But there does seem to also be a need to face the fear, and I suppose somewhere in there is something cathartic, like going to the worst possible imaginable place. You said that amazing quote from Macbeth about present fears are worse than horrible imaginings. You know, it's, you turn on the news right now and there's overwhelm, whether it's COVID figures or the economy or what's going to happen with the election in America. And then I suppose something...
The state of climate.
But yeah, the state of the climate. There feels like a lot of things to be frightened about. So then we're also facing a psychological crisis. And I know that we've talked a lot about, even if I look at people in our own lives, the amount of people we know with COVID is very few, but the amount of people we know with increasing anxiety or increasing insomnia or increasing depression, that's sort of another plague that is running rife at the moment. So it felt, that's just a bit of context about why it felt appropriate to be discussing fear rather than running away from it. It certainly felt like Shakespeare ran towards it. We know that he doesn't mention the plague once in Macbeth, but he mentions fear nearly 50 times. So there was something, this undercurrent of fear and anxiety and how that can be harnessed for good or for bad, who harnesses the fear, who is weaponizing fear. So yeah, that's sort of a bit of context about why the festival happened and why this particular topic felt like something that was useful to talk about, I suppose. And we've immediately launched into like the terror of fear or the terrorism of fear. But there is the sort of the fun bit of fear, which is knowing that we've talked about very real fears, and then there's the fun bit of the imagined fears, which is where ghost stories come in. Do you have anything to say at this particular moment?
I'm just enjoying
time?
I'm enjoying this. I do. You were talking about catharsis.
Yeah.
And you know, there's these things that are innate to being a human being. I think huge emotions and drivers of human beings, and of course Shakespeare would deal with that, seeing so he was dealing with a human being. And I think one of our great drives is is away from fear is to feel safety. All of us have fear, I think. The human animal has fear. I read a great book once called The Denial of Death by Ernest Becker. I recommend it to anybody. But in there, one of the things I remember him saying is, you know, we take a bite of life as big as we can cope with. So that might mean how we choose to have family, how we choose the job we choose, whatever it is how much chaos can we cope with? And I think the bite of life he's saying that we take is to do with how much chaos we can cope with in our life, in a way. And fear often can be fear of chaos, I would say. So fear of societal collapse, for example.
We're going a little bit Noam Chomsky on the Shakespeare podcast.
It is a bit Noam Chomsky. But there is a, I suppose what I'm saying is there's a very real human emotion, which is fear. And as you said, it can be used in many different ways, but we all have fear. And how do each of us deal with that feeling of fear?
Well, maybe let's get to the apocalyptic abuse of power and fear, but let's start somewhere like...
I can't leave it, Michelle. I cannot leave
the apocalypse.
Shock doctrine.
I know, as we teeter on tier two. But why, when you look at, like you say about the denial of death, do you think that's part of the reason why we have so many ghost stories? Like the fact that ghosts appear constantly throughout the canon, you know, that it's a kind of go-to. We know that Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein against the backdrop of a world war. You know, what is it about monsters, death, ghosts coming back? What is our fascination with ghost stories? Like, is that about trying to control the chaos, the idea that there's life beyond, or that... Because we love ghost stories.
Absolutely. So, like... I love every week we... In a little film club we have, we watch our horror film.
We do, and why? What? I mean, there's so many films that we could watch, but we're really sort of religious about putting ourselves through those kind of feelings. I mean, not everybody, some people really absolutely cannot watch horror films, thrillers, ghost stories.
I must say, as I've got older, I'm less inclined to watch them. When I was younger, I was less afraid, actually. As I get older, I feel like maybe it's because we've had a kid, but there's certain feelings I want to try and avoid.
Yes,
do you know what I mean?
Do.
But, and yet I still go back. There's some kind of, I don't know whether it's a Jungian theory or not, the idea of watching a violent film, for example, the numerous violent films that are out there is a way of connecting with a dark side of ourselves that we then don't have to act on.
What are the crucial components of a ghost story for you? I guess it's different for different people, isn't it? A ghost story for me has to feel possible. I remember watching Jeepers Creepers, and the start of that film was so brilliant. And then it, like, as soon as you see the monster, I was like, oh, I can't watch it anymore, because my imagination... It became impossible. So for me, there's got to be the possibility. It's the what if again, isn't it?
Mm.
Like, there's got to be a possibility that it could happen. And I think I do want to be left with a little bit of... It's sort of resolved, but it's not quite complete somehow. Because you're left with the what if.
Yeah, I think it, for me, it's definitely got... As soon as something is... enters the ridiculous, becomes not possible, then I'm no longer scared. I definitely agree with that.
Okay, I've got a question now, and I don't actually, I'm going to ask a question and I don't know if we're going to be able to answer it. But at which point in the canon did ghosts start to come, like really come in, like feature quite heavily in the writing? Because we know Macca's would have been written for those indoor... You know, where does the psychology of darkness start to lend itself to horrible imaginings, as opposed to the daylight, which is actually much more of an imaginative space? The imaginative work to be frightened in daylight is pure imagination, isn't it? Whereas if you're watching something in the dark, then all the conditions around you are working with you, not against you. What conditions do you need to tell a good ghost story? So we know that Shakespeare would have written for daylight. We also know he would have written for darkness. So when Hamlet's ghost comes out, we know it's around midnight, but we also know they would have played at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So Shakespeare's not asking for those literal conditions. He's asking the imagination to do the work. Whereas when we did Macca's, we created literal conditions of blackout, shadow. I'm thinking Woman in Black being terrified in the theatre, but that absolutely exploited darkness. They created conditions where that was possible. Like the audacity of Shakespeare going, I'm going to tell you a really quite frightening, potentially frightening tale in the middle of the day, because he totally understood not only the power of our imagination to go there, but our will to want to go there. Like, what is that? The desire.
The will to want to go there.
The will to, or the desire to want to feel, A, frightened, B, that there is another world, that there's more to heaven and earth, that the life beyond, like, suddenly becomes all about that, doesn't it? But
I think one of the things Hamlet mentions is the fear of, the great human fear, which is fear of our own mortality.
Yep.
And he uses that, doesn't he? The fear, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil. It's the fear of the undiscovered country.
Exactly.
From whence?
No traveller returns.
Right.
Yep.
So the fear, go on.
Yeah, no traveller returns, except he then puts loads of ghosts in the play. So he's still contemplating what, that the possibility that you could come back.
I think you know, this idea of enjoying a ghost story, because the ghost story ends and you go, actually, I'm safe. And you've faced something that is potentially full of fear for you. I think the lie is that we can control life. So we live a life potentially of going, we can control things and building up a life of some form of safety in whatever way. But there must be a part of us that goes, that's not all, that's not everything. And so maybe that's why we sit down in front of ghost stories or listen to ghost stories. And then we survive it. I think often to look at your fear, to look at what you are afraid of, is maybe to come to understand it and yourself a bit more. And that, to put the light of understanding on it, might make the darkness around it go away, you know? But it's quite a difficult thing to look at your own fear, because you're running away from it. Looking at your fears is a very difficult thing to do. So if you can look at your fears and invite the unknown within a story, like Macbeth, but you survive it, but you survive the story, or you listen to a ghost story and it excites all those things in you of fear of the unknown, fear of what you can't see, fear of the chaos, but you let it into your life for a little bit, but the story ends.
But the story ends, but there's still always the question mark of what if, isn't there?
Like, and the what if, I mean, the what if, so two stories occur to me. When we were rehearsing Macbeth, and when I was talking to Rob Hasty, the director, about that, and we were talking about the idea of not messing with the spirits. Like, just in case, don't say Beetlejuice 3 times. Or just in case, don't look in the mirror and say Candyman 5 times. Was it 3 times? I can't remember. And I was talking to him about this time when I was contemplating doing a Ouija board. And in fact, we did do a Ouija board, but the real fear was that I was really playing with is, I don't know for sure.
That's right.
If I start mucking around with this, I don't know for sure what will happen. What would happen if I conjure a spirit into the room and then into our lives? What if that happens? And the danger that involves. And I think that was the exciting idea when we were playing with Macbeth. What if, what if this play is cursed? What if we start talking about the spirits? What if we start messing with the fates? then what happens? But the other thing I say about horror films, what they can do when they're done well. I really liked the film we watched together, Paranormal Activity. And what that did for me was take something that is, again, supposed to be safe and supposed to be known, a couple going to sleep at night. You're kind of in the safety of your room with your partner, you're in bed, you close your eyes, and then one of them gets up during the night and stares at the other one for about 4 hours without blinking because they're possessed by a possessed by a demon. And then so suddenly the place of safety is not safe anymore. Suddenly the bed is not safe.
It's so interesting because I suddenly, now we're talking about it, I'm realising how little Shakespeare relied on those kind of conditions. There's something very pragmatic or theatrical about it. He didn't, so it was completely up to the audience whether they decided to go there or not. The story didn't stand or fail on whether you suspended your disbelief. Whereas something like Paranormal Activity, we watched that in a dark cinema, in like a sleepy Massachusetts town. Every condition was building us up to be in the right place to watch that film.
It was midnight. It was after midnight.
After midnight. Similarly, like when I remember watching The Exorcist at midnight, like the kind of conditions that we now put around it, like Macca's, there was, when we've even contemplated taking Macbeth and doing it outdoors after we'd done it indoors, we hadn't built flexibility into that production. I'm just thinking about how the contagion of fear or the contagion of anxiety, like watching something like that in a group. I mean, I read somewhere recently that anxiety is contagious, that fear is contagious. And reading a ghost story on your own is very different to listening to a ghost story as part of a congregation. And 9 times out of 10 with Macca's, we set up the conditions, didn't we? That we were exactly what you're talking about. The conditions of, we all know we're in a theatre, but what if? And we'd slowly but surely start the conjuring and then we'd allow the play to unfold. And 9 times out of 10, an audience went with it. But I don't know if you remember one day when we had a school party of kids in on a matinee and they just refused. Like, it was an act of will to refuse to engage in it, to suspend their disbelief and to engage in what we were asking them to engage with. The apparitions bit, when the lights go out, really, we had built something into that, that we wanted people to feel unnerved and frightened and were kind of capitalising on them feeling that. And this school party just wouldn't go for it. You realise how much, as when you're reading something or watching something in a ghost story, you have to participate in that, don't you? Because otherwise, like these kids said, because I overheard them say it, what were they talking in like funny voices and stuff for? Like, so those kids, we thought we were all being like really spooky. And so those kids, it was just a bunch of actors dressed up in a theatre. When I realised that Shakespeare never asked anybody, he was asking you to participate, but he wasn't expecting you to. There wasn't an immersion in the way that we immerse ourselves now. When we watch the horror films on a Sunday night, we do turn all the lights out. Or when we did the ghost stories in the playhouse, we had it really dark and lots of shadows. What do you think is behind the impulse to tell ghost stories? You were saying we haven't really talked about ghosts specifically. Like, where do we go? Like, not to get too personal, I suppose, but like when my granddad died, my nana was convinced that a robin came and sat on her windowsill for weeks, like that he'd come back as a robin. And when now my nana's just died, there's a bit of me that is kind of going, are you going to come back and say, but are you going to, like, I'm kind of waiting for something to happen. Like,
like a sign.
Yeah, I think there's something about the possibility of ghosts, which is, you know, some ghosts, like Hamlet's ghost, absolutely wants revenge on the world. I'm thinking of like maybe Constance in King John, where she says, "Grief fills the room up of my absent child, puts on his looks, walks up and down with him." She's kind of, it's like she's imagining the person that she's never going to see again is there. Like, is there also some comfort in the possibility that there could be life beyond?
For sure. I mean, it's like,
so it's not just fear of the unknown, it's also the hope of the but ghost stories are very rarely about anyone from the dead coming back going, "It's nice to see you again."
Yeah. I forgot to tell you. Yeah. I've left the oven on. But I suppose you got me thinking about, there's something rotten in the state of Denmark. Like, the idea that there is something unsettled. And when the ghosts are walking, there's something unsettled. When the spirits are walking, when Titania and Oberon are arguing, there's something unsettled about the world. And that's unnerving when things are unsettled.
Yeah.
And it makes me think, you know, I remember in a previous relationship, Michelle. in a previous relationship, I remember my girlfriend then at the time saying something's wrong, just suddenly going, "Something's wrong." And when she said that, I was like, because she never really said things like that, I was like, okay, that really unnerved me, because it's not how she was. But so that suddenly something's wrong. When the ghosts are walking, something's wrong.
And was there something wrong?
I'd left the oven on. No, I had a no. There, no, but it wasn't that there was a conclusion to it. There was something in the air, and about Hamlet. Just this idea that he's not doing jump scares. He's not playing on, you know, the what horror films might you kind of manipulate into jump scares. He's not doing that. But I feel like with something like Hamlet, when the ghosts are walking, it's not that you're supposed to be scared of the ghosts. It's more that something is unnerved. And it's a feeling, we try to avoid that feeling of being unnerved. Back to what I was saying about like the idea of having as much control in your life as you can do.
That goes back to what we were saying about a ghost is always written as a messenger. They could come back and say, "Hello, I forgot to put the cling film on the sandwiches." That doesn't really make for good drama. Where Shakespeare exploits them is they're coming back as figures of portent, aren't they? They're coming back and you project onto a ghost, you're coming back to tell me something. And I think that's what I was saying about my nan. I'm sort of going, "Have you got anything to say to me?" Or like, I sort of hope, you know, that some unfinished business. But where are those figures of portent? Where are those figures of messengers? So this is the moment just after Horatio, Bernardo and Marcellus have seen the ghost. They then take Hamlet at midnight to wait for the ghost. This is the moment where the ghost of Hamlet, the father of Hamlet, speaks to his son.
"I am thy father's spirit, doomed for a certain term to walk the night, and for the day confined to fast in fires, till the foul crimes done in my days of nature are burnt and purged away. But that I am forbid to tell the secrets of my prison house, I could a tale unfold whose lightest word would harrow up thy soul, freeze thy young blood, make thy two eyes like stars start from their spheres, thy knotted and combined locks to part, and each particular hair to stand on end like quills upon the fearful porpentine. But this eternal blazon must not be to ears of flesh and blood. List, list, oh list. If thou didst ever thy dear father love,
oh God,
revenge his foul and most unnatural murder.
That's like such an amazing description of the physical effects of fear that we all recognise, like your eyes jump out of your head, your blood goes cold,
your hair stands on end.
And what was the first one? Thy soul, like harrow up thy soul, the idea of your soul being. It goes deep. It's a physical reaction, not just a mental, imaginative response. Like your body physically has a reaction to fear.
Mm.
And that the idea that when we're talking about, like, if fear is contagious, the idea that part of it is the will of the imagination, but your body, a fear is a physical, it manifests physically on the body as much as it does in the mind.
And also, I suppose, that whole thing about not naming what it is that is to be feared is, like, you know, often in a horror film, and I think of the original It, for example, the two-parter, the Stephen King two-parter, is really, with that clown Pennywise, I think, terrifying. But as soon as the reveal of, well, it is a massive spider, it's not scary anymore.
Yeah.
And I think good suspense is about leaving it to the imagination, which Shakespeare does so well.
Yeah.
He says, I could tell you things,
but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are those things the spirit could say? So there is something terrifying out there, but it's not for your ears.
Yeah.
It's not that they're afraid of the spirit. What they're afraid of, or what they're interested in, is why the spirit is here.
Yeah.
Something must be wrong.
Yeah.
Either something needs to be fixed in the world so that the spirit can be at ease, or the spirit has come back with some kind of premonition or some kind of knowledge of the future.
Yes.
Both of those things are kind of reasons to fear. If the world is out of kilter, that's something to fear. And if there's something to be known about the future, that could be something to fear.
Yeah, it's more frightening not to know.
Yeah.
It's more frightening that this being might disappear without having had the opportunity to say what it needs to say, which is kind of, like, perfect, because maybe you should do the Hamlet ghost bit now, where he sort of frightens Hamlet into action, doesn't he, in a way?
But still, the fact that there is a spirit there is a reason that there potentially is something to fear.
Yes. It's just an example of what these figures mean, what they represent to people, the idea that they could be a messenger, they could be bringing news back from the undiscovered country. But soft, behold, lo, where it comes again. I'll cross it, though it blast me. Stay, illusion. If thou hast any sound or use of voice, speak to me. If there be any good thing to be done that may to thee do ease and grace to me, speak to me. If thou art privy to thy country's fate, which happily foreknowing may avoid, oh, speak, speak of it. Stay and speak. Why do we think it's good to face that fear now? And I think I go back to, it seems counterintuitive. Like, I suppose as an artistic director, with the little power that I have right now to create any kind of program at work, of work. The last particular program was around Shakespeare and race, which felt vital, necessary, timely. Shakespeare and fear feels like the most honest conversation that we could be having right now. And it's not separate, it's not independent to the conversation that he was also having. We're not crowbarring Shakespeare into a conversation about fear. If we think about the conditions of 1606 or whenever, that when they're going through a plague, they're going through a change of leadership, there was a plot to blow up the Houses of Parliament. This acts of terrorism, acts of nature, acts of power. He didn't write the comedies. That there was something that he felt was necessary to explore about the supernatural, about the other, about the exploitation of the other. And, you know, and Macbeth's mind gets exploited by what could be. He believes what these supposed weird sisters tell him. So I think Shakespeare's Globe, there's a fascination about when we're in a very particularly heightened moment of time. Yes, you want release from it. Yes, absolutely. Like, we love watching Would I Lie to You as much as the next person. And then there's also needing somewhere to go with the fear, whether that's fear of where your next paycheck is coming from, whether that's fear of the virus, whether that's fear of death, whether that's fear of the unknown. That also feels like an honest place or an honest conversation to have. And there's some fun in the ghost stories where you play with fear, and then there's some horror in the ghost stories and horror in those horrible imaginings and how that fear gets exploited via story. But there is something about the need for catharsis of grief, catharsis of anxiety. There's unrest, isn't there? There's dis-ease everywhere. And
yeah, and I feel like if you don't look at your fear in some way, then that kind of gives over some essential power of the self. And I'm laughing because I don't really know how to phrase it. But if you don't allow yourself to have that, if you don't allow yourself to have that conversation with fear, you can be led by somebody else's manipulation of your fear. And I think of the world we're living in at the moment, with, and I put this in like inverted commas, the strongman politics who go, I will solve your problem, and it's these people that are to blame. And so you get a lot of right, you get all sorts of left right wing politics in that. But there's something that, like a leader tapping in, which is Macbeth taps in to fear. He taps into fear, so people fear him, fear what he can do. And I think he also taps into his own fear, which becomes a paranoia of what other people can do to him. And so
I'm just thinking what Lady Macbeth says to him. Lady Macbeth says, what need we fear who knows it, when none can call our power to account? I mean, the thing about ghosts and the other and life beyond is it's deliciously grey. Whereas Lady M is just going, well, it's, prove it. There's still no proof that ghosts exist or don't exist. They still remain ghosts, and the life beyond still remains one of the things that we will never, ever, ever be able to prove. Even dreams, we don't really know how they happen, or nightmares, we don't really know how they happen. You know, I've been in a relationship with you for 10 years and I know a fraction of you. I look at our child who was in my stomach. I don't know her at all. She is a secret to me. And I suppose there's something around, somehow I find comfort in the unknown, like not in the uncertainty of the economy, not in the uncertainty, like there are still very, you know, there are things in the world that have to remain. Like we still have to be able to buy food, we have to be able to live, we want shelter, we want to stay warm. But then there is just, I find it quite comforting that we're a mystery, we're still a mystery. And when I can surrender to that, I find
I also feel comforted when I accept that the world is chaos. The world is kind of unknown, that there's only so much that I can control. I can control, you know, small few things. The pain is trying to control and keep control and keep control. But when I give up to the idea that there's no, that it's okay that there's unknown, that's the truth is life is chaos rather than life is control.
Yeah.
Then I feel better.
Okay, just quickly, last question. What makes you frightened? What makes you feel frightened right now, today?
I you know, all the reading I do on climate and, you know, the potential future that we face. I think what makes me fearful is that the decisions, the world that we need to create in order to be sustainable and in order to create an economy that, rather than a consumerist economy, an economy that can work in a way that doesn't, like, just eat into the planet. My fear is that our fear as human beings will be manipulated by the wrong people. And what I mean by that is, when I see the rise in populism and I see the rise in the idea that it's easy to, economic troubles are going to come because of, and are here because of the pandemic. And that economic trouble is easy to manipulate. And I think my fear is that if people don't get, if we all don't get hold of our fear, and we give up our power to the wrong people because of fear, then I think we're entering a dangerous world. And it's happened throughout history, and I feel like there's a real potential that it could happen now, and that's a fear for me.
Yeah, I suppose my fear is everything's in opposition, isn't it? So my fear, similarly, you know, we watch those. When I think about how those Attenborough films are constructed right now, and they take you to the darkest possible place, and then they bring you back and they say, but this, there is possibility of hope. But always the hope relies on people prepared to go through the struggle. But that takes collective action to go through the struggle. And I think my fear is it is there's absolutely hope, but it's not going to come without hard work. And I feel like feeling frightened and feeling anxious and feeling depressed is tiring. I think people are tired now. So fear, the rhetoric of fear, can really grind you down.
I think that's what I mean by, like, if instead of facing your own fear, if you give it up for somebody else to solve, then there is a problem. Rebecca Solnit, a book I read by Rebecca Solnit, who said, "Hope is only in action."
Exactly, and fear is also in action. Like fear can either make you passive, or fear can incite you into action. And I think that's partly why I want the conversation around fear, like how fear can grip you as an individual, how fear can grip you as an audience, how fear can grip you as a country. The question was also, do you have hope? And so when I think about that Yeats quote, which is, "The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity." In that, he's given all the action to the worst people. I don't feel like that now. I feel like there is collective good. I feel like, yes, people are frightened, but people are taking to the streets. I feel like people are frightened, but people are not using as much plastic. Yes, people are frightened, but they're doing their bit. It is terrifying. Terrorism relies on you totally believing that you're powerless. and maybe something around the ghosts coming back. There's a brilliant quote about ghost stories are as much about insurrection as they are resurrection. There's also something in that, that the ghosts come back, like Hamlet ghosts come back and says, take action, revenge.
Also, I suppose when I was talking about my fear, and that's what I mean about the unknown, the fear is what could be.
Yes, that's
right. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm talking about, you know, I could see a world which I am scared of. I can see a world that I'm scared of because, you know, facing a crisis, unless people take personal responsibility, they give up power to the wrong people. And I think that is a world that could be, and it is in, you know, it's a reality in some places. It is a reality, but my fear is what that world could then become. And actually, as you say, hope is in the action of facing my fear and making that world not happen.
There seems to be so much to be frightened of at the moment, like climate change, the pandemic, the economic crisis, the psychological crisis.
Inequalities, like mass, huge inequality.
This example that we're going to use now is where does, who has power and who wields that power? And, you know, of course, power and fear are inextricably linked, aren't they? But this is just an example of where Shakespeare talks about that at the beginning of Julius Caesar, where Cicero and Casca meet. There's a storm happening, and this is what they say.
Good even, Casca. Brought you Caesar home. Why are you breathless? And why stare you so?
Are not you moved? When all the sway of earth shakes like a thing unfirm, oh Cicero, I have seen tempests when the scolding winds have rived the knotty oaks, and I have seen the ambitious ocean swell and rage and foam to be exalted with the threatening clouds, but never till tonight. Never till now did I go through a tempest dropping fire. Either there is a civil strife in heaven, or else the world, too saucy with the gods, incenses them to send destruction.
Why, saw you anything more wonderful?
A common slave, you know him well by sight, held up his left hand, which did flame and burn like 20 torches joined, and yet his hand, not sensible of fire, remained unscorched. Besides, I have not since put up my sword against the Capitol. I met a lion who glazed upon me and went surly by without annoying me, and there were drawn upon a heap 100 ghastly women, transformed with their fear, who swore they saw men all in fire walk up and down these streets. And yesterday the bird of night did sit even at noonday upon the marketplace, hooting and shrieking. When these prodigies do so conjointly meet, let not men say these are their reasons, they are natural, for I believe they are portentous things upon the climate that they point upon. And like that fear of, you could dismiss things as Casca says, like, yeah, you could say everything's got its reason. You could put it down to science. You could put it down to it's just the weather. These are just natural things. Or you could see these things as tokens, like Cicero dismisses it, kind of going, yeah, it's a strange disposed time. And it's interesting then what happens. Cassius comes in. And then Casca asks Cassius, you know, whoever knew the heavens menace so? That for Casca, it's the heavens that have the power. The heavens have the power that on this earthly world, we have been too saucy with the gods, and now the gods are sending destruction. And Casca says, but wherefore did you so much tempt the heavens? It is the part of men to fear and tremble when the most mighty gods by token send such dreadful heralds to astonish us.
You look pale and gaze and put on fear and cast yourself in wonder to see the strange impatience of the heavens. But if you would consider the true cause, why all these fires, why all these gliding ghosts, why birds and beasts from quality and kind, why old men fool and children calculate, why all these things change from their ordinance, their natures, and preformed faculties to monstrous quality. Why, you shall find that heaven hath infused them with these spirits, to make them instruments of fear and warning unto some monstrous state. Now could I, Casca, name to thee a man most like this dreadful night, that thunders, lightens, opens graves, and roars, as does the lion in the capital, a man no mightier than thyself or me in personal action, yet prodigious grown, and fearful as these strange eruptions are.
I mean, it's so... Yes, be frightened of the gods, or at the heavens, but equally be frightened of the power of a human being.
Yeah, I mean, what is more often, like, what is more scary? What a human can do, what we can do to each other, what a human being can do, is quite a terrifying thing.
That's it from Michelle and Paul, but our Shakespeare in Fear Festival kicks off on Halloween, Saturday the 31st of October. For more information and to buy tickets, please see our website. You've been listening to Such Stuff with me, Imogen Greenberg, Michelle Terry, and Paul Reddy. To find out more about Shakespeare's Globe and what's on, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'll be back soon with more stories from Shakespeare's Globe, so subscribe wherever you get this podcast from.